This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. When's the last time Massachusetts elected an independent candidate for governor? Well, as far as we can tell, the answer is never. But this year, state treasurer and current gubernatorial candidate Tim Cahill is hoping to change that. However, without the muscle and the money of an established party behind a candidate, crafting a clear campaign message can be a challenge. And Cahill himself hasn't made it any easier. The former Democrat turned independent sometimes appears to be campaigning to the right of Republican candidate Charlie Baker. So just who is Tim Cahill? WBUR's Sonari Glinton has this report.
When you first meet him, Tim Cahill seems like an average guy, except he's taller, probably a lot more intense.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. He's running for governor.
You're one of us, Tim. You're one of us.
Well, thank you for
that's Tim Cahill at a nursing home. Patients, nurses, doctors get excited to see the 6'3", blonde, blue-eyed former wrestler. Grown women, elderly women, giggle when they see him.
She's very shy.
Thank you.
A typical day in the life of the 52-year-old state treasurer.
You're a rock star with the nursing home set.
Well, you know, it's gratifying, it's rewarding to know that people know you and seem to like you, but, you know, it's part of what we got to do is just keep going out there meeting people.
People may like Tim Cahill when they meet him, but being a regular knockabout, second of nine kids, hardworking, working-class Quincy guy can only get you so far when you're running as an independent in the Commonwealth. We wanted to learn about the man behind what some call a quixotic adventure. So on a hot summer Saturday morning, I drove to Quincy to meet Tim Cahill in his element.
Sorry, I got hopelessly lost.
Oh, that's all right. No GPS in those babies?
No, I don't, and I don't have a smartphone.
It's kind of off the beaten path, and nobody knows.
To get to know the candidates, we decided to observe them away from the press conferences and their handlers.
So we're supposed to keep this natural, right?
Yeah.
I apologize, I don't have a better hobby for you.
Cahill's hobby? You know. Gardening.
I apologize for the condition of my yard. It's been pretty rough this year with all the heat, no rain. Usually it's looking a little bit better than this, but fortunately this is radio, so no one has to see it.
I follow Tim Cahill for about a month or so. He's always on point. Shirt, tie, jacket, even in the blistering heat. Today it's jeans, work boots, T-shirt from daughter's college. Tim Cahill is weeding, mowing the lawn, and spreading mulch with a wheelbarrow and shovel. He begins to relax. Almost.
I think politicians sometimes, they either try to oversell themselves or make their lives seem more exotic or complicated than they are. You know, mine are pretty simple. You know, my home, my life. Maybe some people would say boring.
Tim and Tina Cahill have been married for 26 years, and they've lived in the same white clapboard house with a few additions for 21 of those years. Cahill's been an entrepreneur, a tour guide, a wrestling coach, but mainly he's been a career politician, councilman, county treasurer, state treasurer, a Democrat until last summer.
I felt strongly back in the summer of 2009, before it seemed to become a popular thing to do, that the Democratic Party was broken. And it wasn't providing the message for people like me and people in the middle class that I thought it used to provide. What people used to say before January 19th is, you know, you have no chance. And after January 19th, geez, you know, you might win.
A Roman Catholic, Cahill is pro-choice with some caveats. He says he supports, quote, reasonable restrictions such as background checks and child safety locks for guns. He's pro-same-sex marriage, pro-death penalty, against raising taxes. He's proposed a resort-style casino and an overhaul of the state's health care and welfare systems. As an independent, Cahill says much of his job is defining for voters just exactly who he is.
It's a lot of hard work. And you're constantly up against people, talking to people who don't think you can win, who say you have no chance, who say, why are you in this race? You're a spoiler. You're this, you're that. You're everything but what you are.
One of Cahill's examples of success is Angus King. He's a former governor of Maine and an independent.
People are still used to voting for partisan candidates, and therefore voting for an independent is viewed as something of a risk.
King was elected, and this is the really tough part, re-elected. But
the first problem an independent has is to be taken seriously.
Cahill has to be taken seriously. He's alienated both parties, and he's not likely to get support for re-election. He's got a second mortgage on his house, two kids in college, two more to go. I wanted to find out what drives him to do it. So I asked his lifelong friend and aide, Scott Campbell.
You know, talk about personality trait. He's driven. And I think he's driven by someone telling him that he can't.
Part of Cahill's drive is he's BU, not Harvard. Quincy, not Newton, says family friend Scott Campbell.
One story I remember him and seeing him was running the beaches with work boots on. That was how he'd work out. And he never heard of it, never saw it, and he always pushed himself. He always, you know, I'd see him, you know, if it was 100 degrees out, I remember seeing him knocking doors back in the early 90s in the city council all by himself and doing all the work of probably four or five people.
Though hard work has always been a hallmark of Cahill's career, Paul Watanabe, a UMass Boston political scientist, says that might not be enough.
Very much been an individual who was always sought the brass ring and been quite successful in doing so, beginning as a small businessman, moving to the city council, really surprising a lot of people by becoming a constitutional officer in Massachusetts by being the state treasurer. And I think he clearly thought that this was an opportunity to be able to secure the top position, which was the governor. At least my belief is that here's a case, however, where I think his reach has exceeded his grasp.
Back in the garden, Cahill says he remains hopeful.
That's the one thing about yard work that's both good and bad is it never ends. You know, when you're trying to do something, there's always something more to do. Plant grass around here. You know, sometimes it grows, sometimes it doesn't.
So you got to make the politics gardening analogy for me.
It is exactly the same. I mean, like you said, grass doesn't cut itself. Government doesn't cut itself. I think there are a lot of similarities.
Finally, after mulching and weeding, it's time for Tim Cahill to mow his lawn.
All right, Sonari. Let's hope this works.
I think Tim Cahill means the governor's race and not just the lawnmower. And if it doesn't, he just might try again.
Thank you so much.
Good talking to you, all right? Take care.
WBUR Sonari Glinton with that report. Well, joining me now for more on Tim Cahill and independence in Massachusetts is Jeff Berry. He's a professor of political science at Tufts University. Professor Berry, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on Radio Boston.
Well, so we just heard Sonari Glinton's report there, sort of taking us into the political life of Tim Cahill. But speaking a little more broadly as well, what strategic reason would there be to run as an independent candidate in Massachusetts?
There isn't a good reason, except that the Republican and Democratic nominations were blocked off to him. He had three bad options. The first bad option was to run against a liberal Democrat in a primary for governor, say, 4 years from now. But the problem is that Democrats that dominate in the primary are Volvo-driving, breed-eating suburbanites, and Tim Cahill's not their kind of guy. He could switch parties to Republican. Ideologically, he's probably fits that party better. But when you switch parties, the partisans don't like it if you run right away for office. Think of Arlen Specter in Pennsylvania. So the third bad option was running as independent, which is the one that he chose. But it's very, very hard to win as an independent. Witness the fact that there are less than 1% of the Congress are independents.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you about that. So you basically said that the type of Democrat who votes in a primary may not be a Tim Cahill-type Democrat.
Right.
But there are, you know, there's a huge number of lunch bucket Democrats in Massachusetts. And what would Cahill have lost, other than the primary, as you're saying, by standing as the man who represents these people, some of whom actually show they're so disaffected with the Democratic Party, they went in January and voted for Scott Brown?
Well, you're right on target. That is the constituency that he's running for. He believes that as a populist, he can appeal to people who are just fed up with government, people who think government's too big, it's too invasive, working-class people, middle-class people. The problem is he's going to split those voters with Charlie Baker, because some of those voters are Republicans and independents and not Democrats.
Well, let me ask you about that then, because the thing that confuses me is I was there when Tim Cahill announced that he was running for governor. I sat in the first row and he had a big black banner behind him because he can't choose red or blue now, being an independent. And then, you know, not too long after that, Charlie Baker announces he's going to run as the Republican candidate. So it's kind of hard to think that he didn't see that coming. But is Cahill's other problem a matter of timing?
I think the real problem is Baker's problem. I think for Cahill, There was no good time to run for the reasons I outlined earlier. He didn't have a good option. But he's creating fits for the Baker campaign because he's running hard right on issues like immigration, for example, where he said he would sign, if he was governor of Arizona, he would have signed that law. And that's pulled Baker to the right. And Baker really wanted to run as a moderate. So what Cahill chose was, you know, Patrick's the liberal. Baker wants to run as a moderate. And the only place open is the right. And Baker wanted to take those conservatives for granted and then move to the middle and expand the moderate vote the Republicans get and hopefully defeat Deval Patrick. Cahill has messed that scenario up.
So on that point, he is having an effect on the race.
Oh, definitely having an impact on the race. He's even though he's not running terribly strong in the polls, he scrambled the Baker campaign and it's lurched around and it's come under a lot of criticism for some of his hard right, his moving to the right, Baker moving to the right.
Mm-hmm. Well, on the polling numbers, he's Tim Cahill's polling in the mid to high teens,
right,
16-17%, which is, in my mind, it's actually not insubstantial. I mean, it's not, it's half of what Governor Patrick, say, for example, is polling at. But if the race, I'll ask you to hypothesize with me a little bit mm-hmm. here, if the race between Governor Patrick and Charlie Baker stays close through September and October, that 17% that Tim Cahill is holding on to becomes of increasing importance.
It becomes of increasing importance, but it's also bad news for Cahill if the race remains very close. Because in a three-person race, there's a dynamic where as you get closer to election day, people who are supporting the candidate who's third in the polls begin to think, well, you know, he's not going to win and, you know, maybe I'll vote for the lesser of two evils. So it's actually bad news for Cahill if the race remains close.
In a way, you almost have to admire Tim Cahill for running as an independent. I know you said that it's because he felt like he may not have had other options. But if we can take sort of the 30,000 foot view of politics in Massachusetts, I mean, when we introduced the piece a little earlier in the show from Sonari Glinton, I mean, I was serious. We looked up when was the last time that Massachusetts had elected an independent for governor. We couldn't really find one, maybe pre-colonial times. But what is it about the way politics is done in Massachusetts that makes running as an independent so very hard?
It's actually hard all across the country. It's not a Massachusetts phenomenon. And the reason is that...
But there have been independent governors in a handful of other states.
That's right. In a handful of other states, Jesse Ventura in Minnesota and Angus King, as you noted earlier. But the problem is that the Republican and Democratic parties are an oligopoly, and they control access to the ballots. They make it very difficult to get on the ballot. State legislatures are made up exclusively of Democrats and Republicans, so it's really hard to break in and create a third party or an independent force within any state in the United States.
What happens to all those unenrolled voters in Massachusetts, the 50% of them during the primaries? They don't vote at all?
They can vote. They can choose to vote. They typically don't. They tend to be less interested in politics, but they're going to be there on election day come November.
Well, they've got a three-way race. Well, there is a fourth candidate, Jill Stein. I do want to acknowledge that.
Well, it's an interesting dynamic, and it's going to be a great race because of the eight debates that you mentioned earlier. So one of Tim Cahill's strengths going forward is that he's going to stand up on the stage with Charlie Baker and Deval Patrick and Jill Stein, and he's going to look like somebody who's worthy of consideration. He's done very well in the debate so far, so he does have some resources.
And he's got eight more to go, as you said. In addition, he also had to weather an onslaught of negative advertising from the Republican Governors Association.
Right.
Charlie Baker seemed to stand by and do not very much about it, and yet Cahill's still in this race. So how do you think that does that show any sort of staying power for him?
I think so. He withstood $2 million worth of very nasty negative campaign ads directed against him. And he's actually pretty much at the point of the polls he was before the ads started. So it's not clear that they've had that much effect.
Mm. And on top of that, Tim Cahill actually has, I believe, the biggest campaign war chest right now, or at least amongst the biggest. He's got $3.2 million yet to spend.
Right.
And the closer we get to Election Day, the more I start wondering when he will actually spend that. So could we possibly see a shift in his popularity if we start seeing him on television all the time come September?
Well, I'm not sure money buys you love, but he is going to be on the airwaves, and it will give him some credibility. What he lacks, though, is what Democrats and Republicans have a lot of, which are volunteers, people in every district and every precinct who always work for the party. And Cahill's an independent. There is no independent party. It's just Tim Cahill.
So you don't see any possibility that maybe we might see something similar to what happened with Scott Brown, that he wasn't polling very well, but on the ground level, driving around in his truck and, right, you know, having people work for him, he was actually reaching out and connecting with voters. You don't, right, see an analogy there to Cahill.
Well, Brown ran a brilliant campaign, but he was running under the radar for a while. And I don't think that's the case with Tim Cahill. And again, Brown was a Republican in a two-person race. This is a three-person race. Cahill's trailing badly.
Hmm. And so what would be your recommendation in terms of honing a message for an independent now? Like, what is the kind of message that Massachusetts voters might respond to?
I think for Cahill, it's going to be really more a personality force that could buy him more credibility. He comes across as everyman, and I think he does that very well. I'm one of you. I empathize with you. I've sat in your shoes. I'm a middle-class guy. I used to own a restaurant. Nothing was easy for me in life. I came up the hard way. And I think that has a resonance, and if he can continue to push that and portray Charlie Baker as from the horse he set on the North Shore, that maybe Cahill can buy himself a few more points in the polls and see Baker's drop by an analogous amount.
Well, we shall see. Jeff Berry, professor of political science at Tufts University, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.